The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 7.
Stillwell said he had to meet me after class in a dark restaurant, so I thought if I wore my wire, I could record everything, you know? Anyway, see, the class is getting thinned out a little bit. Stick with it, okay? I was thinking about it, you know, I didn't want to teach logic for a long time because I thought everyone would run away. And then I felt like it was that it was necessary to teach it. I felt like we reached a point where you need it, and or you can't really read Madhyamika scriptures. You can't really read scriptures about emptiness, serious scriptures. And it's hard, and it's necessary, and you have to do it. So then I was thinking, where else could you get this? You know, and you can't. Okay, there's no place else that I'm aware of where you can get this in a coherent way. You know what I mean? And I thought it's important that we finish it before this series of classes ends, you know, this series of courses. I thought it's pretty much the only time we'll ever have to do it, I think, in the near future. So you are the lineage holders, and you're the ones who are going to have to pass it on to other people. So work hard and sweat a little bit, okay? I mean, I've made it as digestible as possible, but you're still going to have to work a lot to get it. And it's very, very important stuff. So stick in there, all right? I think I only just started informing people that you don't have to read it from the beginning, each reading. And I should have told you maybe earlier, but the easy part is in the middle, okay? It's called Rang Luk, you know, where we present our own position. So there's no way you can get through all the kachikmas, all the arguments, okay? I think Tony realized, you know, we'll debate the first four, something like that. And it made me realize he got it, you know? They are, each one of them, a separate thing to learn. And if you only get through a few of them, that's fine. And I divided them with lines on the reading. So see if you can digest one or two. You have the rest of your life to do the rest of them. And then go to the middle and find where we present our own position and make sure you understand that. And that's a lot easier. But I don't at all expect you or think that you'll ever have time in this class series to read all of the Kachigmas and digest them. They all make sense, by the way. None of them are silly. I mean, some people read them and they say, oh, they're just playing with words or something like that. It's not that at all. Each one has a very important point to make, and each one is necessary for you to understand our own position clearly. And someday you'll realize that. And none of them are stupid and none of them are tricks. They're all very important. So don't, you know, I heard people say that about Dura, about the Kachigmas. Oh, they're splitting hairs, or what's the point of talking about this, or they're just playing with words or something. It's not like that at all. Each one is a sacred experience if you take the time to get into it, you know, and each one will give you deep insight into something important. So don't just skip them or something like that, but try to take them slow, you know, like digest one at a time. Don't try to read the whole thing like a novel. I mean, Buddhist books are not like that. You don't read a Buddhist book from cover to cover and then put it up on a shelf and go to the next one, you know. It's a lifetime's relationship with this book, and that's why you memorize a book in Tibet, and it's like getting married or something, you know. That book will be with you the rest of your life, and you memorize it, you debate it, you go back and re-memorize the parts you don't remember, debate it, forget it, memorize it again, debate it. I had a Mongolian teacher, Geshe Kaunden, who on his deathbed in Howell, in the back where Ngawan lives, was studying Dura. And then I went in and I said, you know, Geshe-la, with all due respect, you're dying, you know. And why are you reading? He's from Gomang, Debung, so he's reading the Se Dura, right? And I'm saying, you know, why are you reading 15-year-old logic stuff, you know, for 15-year-olds? And he says, this is the most important thing for understanding Majjhimika, and I want to be ready next life too. You know, and he was dying, and he had tuberculosis. He had one lung cut out in Baksal refugee camp, and he could hardly walk and his whole life. And then at the end of his life, he's sitting there on his back reading the Se Dura. I remember he was in the hospital, and they took off all his robes, and they put on this thing that went up to here, and it was really gross because his legs were sticking out and everything else. And he didn't care. He was finishing his Se Dura, you know. And, you know, he was like exposed to the air, you know, and it was really terrible to see him like that. But he was sitting there on his back reading Se Dura, you know, and saying, I'm getting ready for my next life, you know. So take it, you know, you'll never get a chance like this. So try to get it this time. It's very, very important stuff. Okay. Okay. Tonight's torture. I giggle while I'm translating these, and then the people who are with me say, what are you giggling about? And I say, I get revenge for all those years on the debate ground when I didn't know what the hell was going on, you know? Say, Gyeongdal? Gyeongdal? This N is a prenasal, right? So don't get worried about it. It's between the gel and the ndel, okay? And the ndel and del is very important because without the n, it becomes tel, which means the opposite of ndel. So this is a very touchy one, and you better get the prenasal right, okay? Gel stands for gelwa. Gelwa means contradiction, okay? And then Delwa means relationship. And tonight's topic from the Duras, from the Dura text, will be Gyeongdal. Gel is the study of when are two objects contradictory, and Del is the study of when do two objects relate to each other, when do they share a relationship. And we're going to explore the different kinds of contradiction and the different kinds of relationship. Okay. Both of them very important for understanding emptiness and cause and effect, dependent origination. Okay. Well, first let's talk about what makes a thing gelwa. Two qualities make something gelwa. Well, they make two things gelwa, right? Gelwa will always be talking about two things. Whether two things are in contradiction, whether two things contradict each other. So when you're talking about contradiction, by definition, you're talking about two separate things, two things which are distinct from one another. And that's called tade. Say tade.
Tade.
Tade means separate or distinct. Okay? And I think the only thing to say here is that there are two different, there are debates about what's the meaning of separate or what's the meaning of distinct. For example, if you call this thing Geshe Lobsang Chunzen, or if you call this thing Michael Roach, it's the same thing, right? So is Michael Roach Tade from Geshe Lobsang Chunzen? You see what I mean? Are they distinct from one another? And generally, in Buddhist logic, we consider them distinct, okay? Lumen Soso Yimbechu, because the primary name is different or something like that. There's two different identities to the same thing. But the main thing is that the two things should be distinct from one another, okay, to have a relationship. In this case, I'm sorry, I don't think that's a good example. Luming means main name, okay? And I don't know what you want to consider my name, main name, but if something has a main name and a secondary name, that doesn't make it distinct from itself. You can't be distinct from yourself, okay? But me and the pen are tade, okay? We're distinct from each other. Why? Because when you conceptualize them, the primary name is separate. That's one way to describe tade, okay? Mainly you can think separate or distinct from one another. Okay. So the first thing, to have a contradiction between two objects, they have to be two objects. Okay? You can't say two things are contradictory if you can't say there's a contradiction if there's not two things there. That's all. Okay? There has to be two separate things there. In Buddhist logic, the word distinction or separate implies the existence of each one of those two things. Okay? And that's a rule. That's an a priori. Okay? And you've got to get used to that. When I say two things are distinct from each other, or when I say two things are separate from each other, I'm assuming that they exist. Okay? So, for example, in Buddhism, you can't say that something which doesn't exist contradicts something which does exist. Because one of the pair, there's no tade. There's no distinction there between the two objects, because there are no two objects. There's only one object. Okay? So you can't discuss the whether or not something which does exist contradicts something which doesn't exist, okay? And that's a general rule. Now, whether or not non-existence itself exists is a bitter debate in Buddhism, but that's another story. Right now, let's say, tadepe, some texts say tadepe ch, okay? Existing things which are separate, okay? And you have to get used to that. So tade, when we say tade, or separate or distinct from each other, we're assuming that the two things exist, okay? The second feature of a contradiction is that there should be no shitumba. Say shitumba. Shitumba. Shitumba means, this is tricky. Mepa means there is no shitumba, okay? Mepa means there is no shitumba. And shitun has a 100 lousy translations in books that you can buy at East-West Bookstore and other places. You know, I mean, there's 1,000 lousy ways to translate it. I've seen common locus. Somebody told me stratus. What was that? Common stratus or something like that. Come on, it just means one thing which is both things. Okay? One thing which is both A and B. You can translate it like that. She means foundation. Tun means harmony. Okay? And what it means is one thing which can be both A and B, and it's always like that. Okay? Sometimes it's A and B and C. Sometimes it's A, B, C, and D. But anyway, it's one thing which can be both of those things or more. Okay? And that's called a shitumba. Okay? A real gelwa, the ultimate meaning of contradiction, is that two objects are separate from one another, distinct from one another, and there is no one thing which can be both. Okay? Shitumeba. Tadeyimba and Shitumeba. I'm simplifying, but that's the basic thing. Okay? That's the meaning of contradiction. Two kinds of contradiction. Yeah? Well, it's a good question. He asked, do you mean both of them contradicting each other? In Buddhism, You can contradict one way and not contradict the other way. Okay? And we'll talk about that. But you can say that A is contradictory to B, but B is not contradictory to A at the same time. Okay? Or you can say A shares a relationship with B, but B doesn't share a relationship with A. For example, a tree bears a relationship or shares a relationship with its seed, and it's a relationship of the kind we call coming from its seed, the relationship of something that came from something else. So that in Buddhism, the tree is related to the seed. So there's a one-way relationship, but we don't say that the seed is related to the tree. Okay? Didn't come from the tree. But we'll get to that. All right? And that's something you have to, we'll talk about it, but in Buddhism, it can be contradictory one way and not contradictory the other way. A can contradict B, but B not contradict A. Okay, and we'll get into it. Okay, or maybe we won't. But anyway, okay. Two kinds of contradictions. Say pensin, pangya. Pensin, pangya. This is the first kind of contradiction. Pensin means mutually, okay? Pensin. Bang means eliminate. Gyal means contradiction. And you can call this, I translate this as the kind of contradiction which is mutually exclusive, where the two things are mutually exclusive, all right? And what it means is no one thing can have both, okay? No one thing can be both. For example, one example would be changing thing and unchanging thing, okay? Changing thing and unchanging thing. They're contradictory. Why? You could never find a shitumba. You could never find one thing that is both changing and unchanging. Okay? By the way, anytime we talk about contradiction in Buddhism, we're talking purely or wholly one and wholly the other. Okay? For example, are blue and red contradictory? Are they gelwa? In Buddhism, they are, okay? Why? They are. And then somebody says to me, well, what about the American flag, you know? It's red, white, and blue. But in Buddhism, when we say contradictory, we mean it cannot be wholly blue and wholly red, all blue and all red at the same time. No one object can be all blue and all red at the same time. And then people come up with purple and stuff like that, but it's not the point. You cannot be all blue and all red at the same time, so those two colors are contradictory. Contradictory. They're contradiction. Okay? And that's the first kind of contradiction. I wanted to give you some examples of them. And Pensin Pangyal means Yongchu Nangchu. It's a special Yongchu Nangchu means there's a special kind of contradiction where when you perceive one of them, it automatically excludes the other one. Okay? When one of them is present, it automatically excludes the possibility of the other one's presence. Okay? And that's called, and that's a necessity in Pensin Pangyal. Pensin Pangyal should be like that. So what it just means is that one thing cannot be both. Another example would be a water pitcher and everything which is not a water pitcher. You see? That's what we call a totality, Pensin Pangyal, meaning there's nothing else in existence besides those two. Okay? Pensin Pangyal. One of them is the opposite of the other, considering all things in existence. Okay? So, like the pen and everything which is not the pen covers everything in the universe. And that's one kind of gyalwa. There are other kinds of gyalwas like heat and coldness. Okay? Heat and coldness. No one object can be heat and coldness at the same time. But there are other objects in the universe which are not heat and coldness. You see what I mean? So, like the mind. Okay? So there are This is another kind of contradiction where no one thing can be heat itself and coldness itself at the same time. But there are other objects in the universe which are not heat and coldness. Okay? Yeah. It's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. They can't exist without the other. That's true. Yeah. He said heat and cold are not heat and cold from their own side because they're relative to each other. Or something like that. He said, for example, if one person is experiencing it as hot and one person is experiencing it cold, then why can't heat and coldness be simultaneously present in one object? But then you can say that about anything. You know, this pen is a chewable object and a pen, so are you saying that a pen and a chewable object are not contradictory? To one person's experience, perhaps. Maybe you can say it that way. Okay? I mean, one person can be a tantric deity and a demon to two different people. But that doesn't mean that those two things are not contradictory. You see what I mean? Let's put it that way. Also, there's a difference that we're going to get into between hot and cold and heat and coldness. Okay? There's a difference between heat and coldness and hot and cold. And we'll talk about that. Okay? I'm talking about absolute coldness and absolute heat. As absolutes. Okay, yeah.
What was the term you used for something that included the two of them would include everything?
I would call it, what do you call it, comprehensive or something like that. But in Tibetan, there's another division in Tibetan, but I'm not going to go into it. But I'll go into it since you asked. There'd be a direct contradiction and an indirect contradiction, okay? And in the case of Pensum Pangyal, it would be a direct one would be a water pitcher and everything which is not a water pitcher. Okay? And an indirect one would be, Thakpa and Chepa. Okay? Thakpa meaning an unchanging thing, and Chepa meaning a thing which is made. Okay? Thakpa is directly contradictory to what? Mithakpa. I mean, mentally. And when we say contradictory, we're talking about mentally. When I say an unchanging thing is directly contradictory to what you think, changing thing. Okay? I'll say it again. When I say, give me the direct contradiction of an unchanging thing, you think changing thing. Okay? And that's what pops into your mind, and that's what we call a direct Pensum Pangyal. Okay? A direct mutual exclusion. Okay, that's a direct one. Now, an indirect one is an unchanging thing and a thing which is made. Okay? Because a thing which is made is always a changing thing, and a changing thing is a direct contradiction of an unchanging thing. That's all. Okay? And that we call an indirect contradiction, an indirect mutual exclusion. Okay? I'll go over it again. When I say, what contradicts unchanging, you think changing. Then if I say, well, can any one thing be both unchanging and something which is made? And you go through this mental process. You see, you say to yourself, well, anything that's made must be changing, and I know that changing is the direct opposite of unchanging, so no, it's a contradiction. But you have to go through a process to reach that. Your mind goes to changing, and then it goes to contradicts unchanging. So your mind first goes to made, and then your mind goes to changing, and then your mind says that contradicts unchanging directly. So that's what we call a mutual exclusion, which is indirect. Okay? Yeah? That's a good example. Thapa Ngopo would be, he's mentioning unchanging thing and working thing. Is that direct or indirect? Indirect. What about working thing and an existing thing which doesn't do any work? That's direct. You see what I mean? Ngu me and ngu po are Pensum Pangyal, ngu ki Pensum Pangyal, and Ngopo and Thapa are Gyu Kipen Sampangyo. Gyu, okay, Gyu meaning indirect. Okay, and that's in your reading. You can see that. In fact, here's the example of a direct one. Ngopo meaning a thing which does something, a working thing, and then ngume meaning something which doesn't do anything, something which has no work. By the way, and when we say that, we're always implying an existing thing which does no work. Okay? You can't just say something which does no work, because things that don't exist at all do no work also. Okay? You always have to be careful when you're debating, right? You have to say an existing thing which does no work is the direct contradiction of a thing which does do something. Okay? You got to be careful there. Okay? Yeah. Leon said it sounds like a semantic thing rather than a mental thing. Yeah.
Because those three things that you're citing, working thing, they're supposed to be the same thing.
Yeah. Leon said they're, after all, they're all the same thing. Working thing, changing thing, and made thing are all the same thing. But yeah, semantically, as you'll see in, it's actually already been in the logic text, they each have a different way of producing the conception of the person who hears that word. You know, the dunji you get, the mental image you get from each word is different. And even though they're all refer to the same set of things, it's semantic in that sense, that does the word have the power to suggest directly to the mind? What does it suggest directly to the mind? And that's, yeah, each one of those three has a different... And that was, if you go back and look at the distinction between three or different qualities asserted, the qualities we're trying to prove. In the discussion of formal logic, in discussing the quality you're trying to prove, they discuss that distinction. You can go back and look at it. It's in that section. Okay. Even though working thing, changing thing, and thing which was made all refer to the same set of things, they give you a different mental picture when I say them. Okay. And yeah, this does refer to are the two mental pictures directly contradictory? Okay, and that's the distinction. Okay, here's the second kind of contradiction. Say, Lenjik Minengyal. Lenjik Minengyal. Lenjik means to stay together. Lenjik means to stay together. You might remember the word Lenge, meaning ignorance which is inborn. So Hlen has the meaning of two things which always come together. Hlenchik means together. Mine means they can't stay. They can't coexist. Okay, Hlenchik Mine means they cannot coexist. Gel means a contradiction. A contradiction which involves, I would call it, I think in the reading I call it, what did I call it? Diametrically opposed? How's that? Diametrically opposed. An example, I mean, one of the kind of lighthearted examples in scripture is Ukpa and Charok. Say Ukpa. Charok. Ukpa. Charok. Ukpa means an owl. Charok means a crow. And supposedly they don't get along, they don't like each other. And they can't stay on the same branch together. And when people teach this to children in the monastery, they say, hey, it's like a crow and an owl, you know? Like they can't coexist on the same branch. But the real examples in scripture are Nyambo and Pangcha. Say Nyambo. Pangcha. Nyambo. Pangcha. Nyambo means an antidote for something, or a fix for something, or a counter agent for something. Okay? And Bangja means, in Buddhism, it means a negative spiritual quality, a negative quality of a person. So Nyambo can be translated as a spiritual antidote, and then Bangja would be a negative quality that you have that you'd like to get rid of. Bang means to get rid of something. Bangja means to be gotten rid of. For example, if you had a problem with laziness, if that was bangja, something you wanted to get rid of, then a death meditation would be a nyambo. You see what I mean? If you had a problem with desire and for sense objects, bangja, then you could meditate on, there's a thing called skeleton meditation, where you it's in the Abhidharma, and you start with this, you start with a tiny point in the center of your forehead, and you picture it as rotten, as rotting, like a gangrene or something. And then it starts to spread. And you do this meditation, and you let it spread and spread and spread until your whole forehead, you can see the bone. And then you let it rot and keep, and then the skin peels off, and then you keep going down through your whole body. And then you start with the carpet, and you see it start to fray and get old and stinky, and then you reach the pews and you see them rotting and falling apart and eaten by worms, and then you go out to the walls of the building and see them collapsing, you know, as they will, right? And rotting and falling down, and then you go out to the whole Manhattan and see it as it will be one day, just a ruin, you know, everything rotting, rusting, things falling down, stinky. And then you go to the ocean and you dry it up as it will be one day, you know, and you let all the fish sit there stinky, and you destroy everything until you cover the whole planet, you know. And then you bring it all back. And you come back to this dot here. And that helps remove desire. And those are nyembo, okay? Nyembo means a spiritual antidote, for bangja means a negative personal quality, okay? Yeah. Yeah. They didn't really give a definition, but, oh, I'm sorry, there is a definition in your reading. It's two things which conflict with each other, in such a way that they act against the continued existence of each other. Okay. Yeah, well, let's talk about it this way. They talk about a process with Lenjik Menengyel. Okay, the second kind of contradiction implies a process, and it's described like this. The meditation I just described, which is called Gengru Dingin Zin, skeleton samadhi, okay, and this desire for objects, sense objects, the meditation encounters the desire, okay, there's an encounter, and then the meditation starts to work on the desire and wear it down, slowly, slowly, and then as the meditation gets stronger, the desire gets less, so it's a process where one starts to work against the continued existence of the other. Okay, until finally one of them has overcome the other. But it's a gradual process of encountering, working on it, and then removing it. Whereas mutual exclusion just means, look, the minute this is red, it can't be blue anymore. Okay, that's all. Immediate exclusion of the other quality. You see the difference? And those are the two kinds of contradiction. The second one is not a legal contradiction. Only the first one is the real meaning of contradiction. Okay? So generally, although we speak of two kinds of contradiction, the first one is the real one. Okay? And I'll give you another example which is a little harder. Can one state of mind be grasping to an object as self-existent and at the same moment be understanding its emptiness perfectly? Impossible. You see what I mean? Cannot be. You cannot be directly understanding a thing's emptiness and at the same time be grasping to it as being self-existent. No one state of mind, meaning a millisecond state of mind. You can alternate between the two in a few minutes, thousands of times. But at the millisecond that you're understanding the emptiness of a thing, you cannot at that same moment perceive it as being self-existent. So in that sense, those two states of mind are Pensum Bangyal, the first kind. Okay? No one state of mind can be both. No one millisecond of your mind can be both. So in that sense, they are mutually exclusive. But in the other sense, you know, as a problem in your mind, as a problem in your life, as a problem in your ongoing mental continuum, now I'm talking about the continuum of your mind, they are Lenjik Menengyel. Okay? I always say they're like two guys that say, this town ain't big enough for both of us. You know, I mean, you can't go on thinking of things as self-existent. As your wisdom gets stronger, okay, as your understanding that things are empty gets stronger, slowly the perception of them as self-existent has to start leaving town. First he has to move out of Midtown, out to the suburbs, and then finally has to leave altogether, you know. But there is a period where one is working against the other, okay. So that's a delicate example, okay. It's an example of both in a sense, okay. Relative to 1 millisecond of mind, they are mutually exclusive, and you could call them pensumpangyo. Relative to a mental continuum, they are antidote and problem. And they are working against each other through a process. And that's called Hanjik Minengyo. And that's a good example of both. Now, heat and cold are the same. And I think I screwed it up earlier tonight. You figure it out. Okay? I mean, no one thing can be hotness and coldness at the same time. Am I right? But hot and cold can work. No. Hot and cold, nothing can be hot and cold at the same time. But warmth and coldness can work. Yeah, I think I messed it up. Let's reverse that. Okay. You figure it out. I had trouble with it. I think I screwed it up on the reading, okay? You check, okay? In one sense, they are mutually exclusive. No one object can be heat and cold at the same time. How's that? But with regard to the process, that when you have a cold room and you turn on the heat, then slowly the heat begins to work on the cold. So I guess heat and cold are Hanjik Minengyo, and hotness and coldness. The text says Sarek and Trangrek, a cold sensation and a hot sensation are Hanjik Minengyo. Sooner or later, one pushes out the other. And heat and cold in and of themselves are mutually exclusive. How's that? Okay. The text makes that distinction. All right. I don't know if I got it right in the English, but you worry about it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they have to be distinct from one another. Yeah, well, I didn't make that a separate quality. Like on the homework, it'll say, give the two criteria to be contradictory, and you'll say they have to be separate objects, and they have to be such that no one thing can be both at the same time. And then when I threw in they have to be existing things, I want you to know that when in Buddhism, when we say separate, we're assuming existing objects. So if some guy came up to you in the first Kachikma after the Rang Luke in this very reading and said, non-existent things are contradictory to existing things, you have to say no. Well, why? Because they're not distinct. Well, why? Because they're not distinct objects. Well, why? Because one of them ain't an object. Okay, and you won't get that argument unless I tell you that, okay? That's all.
Existing can be defined by a valid perception.
Yeah, sure. Okay? Definition of existence is that which you can perceive with a valid perception. Okay. Not what the New York Times says. Okay. By the way, I thought you might like to know the text from Sarah doesn't give all this detail, but the one from Debung does. Okay? Don't tell Rinpoche I said that. Example of a direct contradiction for Hanjik Minengyo. You see, they divide that one where they don't get along with each other, where they stop each other's continued existence, or they work against each other's continued existence. They also divide that into direct and indirect in the Debung scripture, which say Dura, which is a pretty cool Dura, I have to admit. Okay, they give two examples: light and dark, light and darkness. Okay, light and darkness. I mean, when you turn on the light, it encounters the darkness, and then there's a process of the light removing the darkness. Okay, and that would be a direct contradiction of diametric opposites, as opposed to a direct contradiction of mutually exclusives. Okay, in that sense of turning on the light. Okay, in that context of turning on a light, and then hot touch and cold touch. You know, like if the room is cold and you turn on the heat, then slowly the the feeling of warmth removes the feeling of cold. Okay. The tangible object called warmth removes the tangible object called cold. How's that? Because when you say tangible object, then you're talking about one person. How's that? Okay. Now here's an example of an indirect one. They say huge clouds of smoke and a feeling of coldness on a certain location. Okay? So on a certain block, there are incredible, huge, billowing. You know, you've seen, you know a building is well on fire. You know the whole building is on fire if you see this kind of smoke. It's the huge masses of smoke. And then you're thinking about something cold in that location. You cannot see the fire, but you do see the smoke. And that's an indirect contradiction. An indirect contradiction of diametric opposites. Okay? You know that cold cannot be there because you see this huge smoke, even though you can't see the direct opposite of cold, which is fire or heat. Okay? And that's a case of an indirect one, which is not covered in your reading. Okay? Because your reading comes from today's reading comes from the Sarah manual. Okay? All right. We'll go on to relationships. Yeah, there's a debate in this. You'll see, they'll say, is there anything which is not a contradiction? And the answer, I think, is no. If I remember correctly, there's a Katyuka about it. And they say, find something which is not a contradiction. And then finally they say, well, I can't. You know. Okay. By the way, no one thing is a contradiction ever. But everything that exists will eventually be involved in a contradiction, which if you've been alive long enough, you know that, right? Okay. Say, Dakchiki, Dewa. Dakchiki, Dewa. Okay. There are two kinds of relationship. Now we're done with contradiction, okay? We're on to relationship. You're moving to the Dura at an unprecedented speed. You can get the 50 pages of Kachigmas in the reading, okay? By the way, I'd really like to thank all the people working on those readings. It's a hell of a lot of work. It's like many, many nights, many, many late nights, and a few people are really working hard on it, which you can probably guess if the thing is getting so huge, you know? But anyway, Dachiki Drawa means the kind of relationship where to be one thing is to automatically be the other thing. Okay? It's the kind, Dakchik means one self or one being. And I don't like, and I don't encourage you to ever translate things in a weird way where you come out with some weird expression like the relationship of one selfnesses is or something like that, you know? And that's the way they do it in a university. And we're freed from that restriction, right? We don't have to impress anybody. We just want to get to the meaning of the thing. The meaning of the thing is a relationship which is such that to be one of the things is automatically to be the other thing. And let's call it that, okay? And not a relationship of single self-necessity or something, okay? We can just say what it is. And I pray that you spread Buddhism this way, because otherwise it won't spread and it will die in the minds of a few people and nobody will ever benefit by it. You have to find words, common ground, right? The rule of Buddhist logic. Must find common ground. It begins with common language, common words. Words that the people that you're talking to can understand. You know, otherwise you have already broken the rules of Buddhist logic because you are outside of common ground. Okay? So, by the way, this is an example of a relationship which can go one way and not the other way. Okay? What is the relationship between mitapa and chepa? What's the relationship between a changing thing and a thing which is made? It's a dakchik, dewa. It's a relationship such that to be one is automatically to be the other. Okay? Anytime you are a changing thing, you're automatically a made thing, a thing which is made. Anytime you're a thing which is made, you're automatically a changing thing. This is a two-way street. This is a two-way relationship such that to be one is to be the other, automatically. Okay? How about car and Chevrolet? No, it's only one way. Okay? When you're a Chevrolet, to be a Chevrolet is to automatically be a car. But to be a car is not to be automatically a Chevrolet. Okay, so we say, and you gotta, this is very tough, for those of you learning Tibetan. I had some students over the other day and we were talking about sentence structure. And these are people who never studied grammar in high school, which seems to be what they do nowadays. And we were saying that English is normally SVO. I mean, I learned that when I was teaching. Rinpoche went to Georgetown University and I spent 6 months of torture explaining him SVO, you know, subject, verb, object, okay? I mean, most English is, you know, I like you, okay? I go to the store, okay? And that's subject, verb, object. The sentence order of Tibetan, as you may have noticed, is what? S-O-V, okay? Not B, okay? S-O-V, you know? I, you, like. I to the store go, okay? And that's the normal S-V-O. I mean, sorry, S-O-V, okay? Now, in expressing relationship or contradiction, it gets very nasty and it's very idiomatic. And if you don't get it right the first time, you will wander in the Madhyamika scriptures for years, okay? So get it right, okay? Here it is. It's very idiomatic. You say in Tibetan, when you say that something is related to another thing such that to be it is to be the other thing, you say the other thing first. Sorry, second. Okay. Had a hard day, okay? Okay? The thing being related to is second. The thing relating to it is first. So you say, Chevy, car, dang dakchik. And you use the word and. Dakchik means one being, okay? And what this sentence means is, to be a Chevy is to automatically be a car. And I hope you translate it that way. Okay, it's very difficult, Tibetan. Yeah. you say, Chevy, car, dang dakchik. Okay, Chevy car dang dakchik. That's all. To be a Chevy is to be a car. Okay, to be a Chevy is to automatically be a car, and I hope you translate it that way. And you know, if you don't know this idiom, you can really dung looks like and dakchik means one guy, and what the hell's going on here? Okay, very difficult. By the way, Gelwa is expressed the same way. You would say, for example, let me find some empty space. Let me think about it. How about this one? Say yepa, mitakpa. Dung, gel. Yipa, mitakpa, dung, gel. I gotta be careful, okay? It goes like this. Being all existing things is contradictory to being something which is changing. Okay? I'll say it again. And that's how you have to translate it, okay? Very nasty. And you can go home and look it over a couple of times, okay? I'll say it again. Being all existing things is contradictory to being a changing thing. Okay? But reverse it. Okay? Being a changing thing is not contradictory to being an existing thing. All right? So this is a one-way relationship of being one to be automatically be the other. Okay, it's a very tricky, all right? You have to think about it. Being all existing things is contradictory to being a changing thing. All existing things is not a thing which is a subset or which is equal to the set of all changing things, okay? Although the opposite is true, all changing things are a subset of existence itself. And for this, you have to know a rule of logic that if a set includes both changing and unchanging things, we consider it unchanging. Okay? All existing things includes things which are changing and things which are unchanging. But when I say all existing things, I'm sort of stating again a general truth, am I not? And in that sense, it's unchanging. Okay? It will always include those many objects. Okay? Whether they happen to be around or not, how's that at any given time? Whether examples of them, you see what I mean? The isness of the universe is unchanging. Okay? The things that are in that shoebox may be changing or unchanging, but the shoebox itself is unchanging. Okay? So, yapa mitapa dangya, mitapa yapa dang mingya. And you have to go home and chew on that. Okay? Alright? Being a changing thing is not contradictory to being existing things, but being existing things is contradictory to being a changing thing. Okay? And you have to get used to that. Alright? You have to chew on that. Okay? I'm just trying to help those people who are trying to learn Tibetan with the impossible idiomatic syntax here. You will never get over it unless somebody trains you, you know, to work with it. So you got to work with it. It'll come up often in the Madhyamika scriptures. You will never be able to read a lot of Nagarjuna or Jetsongkhapa or anybody else, Shantideva on emptiness, if you don't understand this structure. Okay? That's all. It's awful quiet out there. Okay. Okay. Say Pumba. Pumbaa Dokpa. Pumba. Pumbaa Dokpa. If you want a good example for a relationship such that one thing is automatically the other, you could use Pumba and Pumbaa Dokpa on your homework. That usually wakes them up. That's why I invented the homework. Say Pumba. Pumbaa Dokpa. Pumba means a water pitcher. I hope my students never translate it as vase. That's not the point, right? And Pumbaa Dokpa. Dokpa is that tricky thing, meaning the reverse of all that a thing is not. Okay? The reverse of all that a thing is not. What's the reverse of all that this pen is not? It's the pen. Okay? But Pumbaa Dokpa is not the same as Pumba. Right? Okay? Is one of them unchanging? Nasty question. Anyway, pen and the opposite of all which the pen is not. How's that? Pen and Dokpa means the reverse of all the thing is not. Remember, Dokpa is very important in this school because that's, according to them, how you perceive things. By eliminating all that the thing is not, you perceive the thing. And some Tibetan Buddhist schools have mistaken that for emptiness. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, or the opposite. Yeah. Yeah. Everything that's not what it's not. Okay. Right. And those two things are related that way. You see? Those things are such that the minute you are the pen, you are automatically the opposite of all that the pen is not. Okay. And they are two separate things. Okay? They are two, they're distinct from one another. Do they refer to the same thing? Yes. Are they two separate things? Yes, they are. They're distinct. How's that? They're distinct. The opposite of all that the pen is not is distinct from the pen. Are they the same thing? Yes. Perhaps in the way that you perceive them. Okay? When you, by the way, when you perceive the reversal of the pen, I call it the reversal, all that the thing is, the opposite of all that it is not, you're actually perceiving, you are excluding the opposite of all that the pen, you're excluding the opposite of the exclusion of all that the pen is not. How's that? But when you perceive the pen, you're just perceiving the exclusion of all the pen is not. But when you perceive the exclusion of all the pen is not, you're perceiving the exclusion of all that is not, the exclusion of all that the pen is not. Okay. And by the way, you better get used to thinking like this, because you, if your mind isn't into this, if your mind's not sharp enough to handle that easily, then you're going to have trouble with emptiness, you see? Sooner or later, you got to buckle down and read those kachigmas and be able to get through them fluently. You know, sooner or later, you're going to have to. If you want to see emptiness directly, It's not just word games of logicians in a college or something like that. It's your mind has to be able to quickly move to those things so that you can perceive emptiness directly. You sooner or later you have to buckle down and be able to do that. Okay, so that's all. Yeah. You're beyond me now.
Those relations make us possible to see that thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can say that. In this school especially, yeah, that's necessary for perceiving.
But the point is that if you could refer to that thing, then we're talking about it as one thing because those two distinctions exist.
Yeah, you can say that, I guess. Yeah. He says you can talk about it because that distinction exists. So therefore, the distinction is important, and they are distinct. And I guess you could say that. It's important that they're distinct because to understand how you perceive the pen, you have to be able to perceive the second one, which is that how you perceive the pen is by excluding all which is not the pen.
Okay.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, nominally they're distinct, conceptually they're distinct, and ontologically they're not distinct. That's fine. That's all right. You can say that. Okay. Okay, we got into some big words. All right. I'll lay one more on you. What the heck? Then we'll have some fun. Say, Dejungi Dawa. Dejungi Dawa. The second kind of relationship, okay? Which is a cause and effect relationship, if you want to say it easily. Dejung means which came from it. The relationship of a thing and the thing which it came from. Okay? The relationship between a thing and the thing which it came from. By the way, this is not a two-way street. Okay? We're talking about the relationship of a thing with the thing which it came from, and not the relationship of a thing which is about to produce a thing which doesn't exist, okay? Because that can't be a relationship because they're not distinct, because they're not two distinct objects, because they're not two objects, because one of them ain't an object yet, okay? And then you get into this nasty debate, well, by the time the tree's there, the seed's not there, so you don't have two distinct objects, so there's no two objects, so you can't have a relationship. And then we say, over a period of time, I mean, or something like that, you know, conceptually, or when you speak of the thing result, you're assuming, you're talking about the cause in the same breath, okay? By the time you call a thing a result, you're also conceptualizing its cause. It's technically true that at the instant that the result is there, the cause is already gone. But we can still speak of a relationship over a period of time, okay, like that. Okay, we can still speak of Tessie over the period of her whole life. We can say in her whole life she's only eaten this once. Even though all the Tessies from the millisecond that we're talking about on back don't exist anymore. Okay, but we can still say whether or not she's eaten something because we can still consider her over the length of her lifetime. Okay, that's all. Here's an example of two things which share a Dejungi Drawa one way. Okay. Only one way. And we'll find out which way later, okay? After you write the Tibetan down. Yeah.
I remember you telling me last semester that this school.
That was last semester.
This school said Saimsheng is
called. No, Abhidharma School. Abhidharma School. Yeah. He said, is this the school that accepts that cause and effect don't have to happen sequentially, that they could happen at the same time? Mainly Abhidharma School. This school, I believe, also has a presentation similar to that. I don't remember if they have that particular clause. They might, but when they talk about relationships, they say it's impossible.
It has to, because yeah. They define existence.
Yeah, yeah. Say, ngopa, chiloksu, chungwa. Ngopa, chiloksu, chungwa. Ngopo means working thing, any working thing. Chi means later. Alok is a Tibetan word that means, especially when you say it with a sa, okay? It's like when you flip a pancake. That's called lok, lok the pancake. So chilok, remember in Future Lives class, I'm always talking about the thing that flops over into? That's the flapjack thing, okay? Chilok suchuma means a working thing in the moment after it, okay? I like to translate it that way. A working thing in the moment after it. Working thing, millisecond number two. Okay? Working thing as it will exist in millisecond number two. The flop over of working thing, millisecond number one. How's that? Chilok suchuma means, chuma means happened. So chilok suchuma means flop. And now we're into the second instant of the thing. Okay? The thing in its second instant bears or shares a relationship of having come from something else with lupo, meaning here the original thing, okay, the original working thing. Okay, so pen of millisecond number two shares a de jungi doa with pen of millisecond number one, but we cannot say that pen of millisecond number one shares such a relationship with pen of millisecond number two, because number two hasn't happened yet. Ouch. I was hoping I could get away with it and say, oh, let's take a break. Pen of millisecond number two, which you can call lupo chilo suchuma. Okay? The working thing as it is the moment after it. Okay? Pen of millisecond number two shares a dejungi dewa with pen of millisecond number one. But pen of millisecond number one doesn't share such a relationship with what? It doesn't exist yet. What are you talking about? Okay, that's all. That's all. It doesn't exist yet. You can't say that. All right.
Well, pen of millisecond number two, pen of millisecond number one doesn't exist either.
Yeah, but they say that's okay. No, they say at that moment, in millisecond number two, you can be considering the entire duration. You see, that's why I brought up Tessie in the length of her life. But it doesn't matter how much length of life you talk about when you're talking about Tessie tomorrow, because that cannot be included in length of life yet, because it hasn't happened yet. That's all. It's a fine point. Okay? You can consider as a group the milliseconds of the present and the past together. Let's put it that way. You cannot consider as a group the milliseconds of the present and the future together, because the future ones don't exist yet. That's all. And have never existed. How's that? Okay. Okay, that's the relationship. I think I'll give you a well-deserved break. And when you come back, we'll do something much more interesting. Okay, yeah?
What's the subject of that?
Sorry?
What's the subject of that?
Which one?
The one that the working thing or the
second thing? Oh, that's a good question. Leon asked, what's the subject of the sentence? You can say the working thing of the moment after it shares a relationship with the original working thing. Okay?
So you're talking about something that doesn't
exist? No, I'm talking from the point of view of the second millisecond.
So that's the subject.
Yeah. 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 If you want to, you can say the working thing from the point of view of the result, okay, of it being a result, shares a relationship of having come from the working thing of the moment before it. How's that? Something like that.
Which is the only thing that we can say something about.
Yeah, really. Well, you can also talk about this structure shares a relationship of having come from Lincoln's assassination. And we say that, you know, somehow Lincoln's assassination affected this structure. And we can say that it bears a relationship with Lincoln's assassination. But we can't say that Lincoln's assassination, at the time of the assassination, shared a relationship with this Quaker house, which didn't exist yet. That's all. And Majjhimika Prasangika has a different idea about the past, present, and future, and we'll get into that Sunday. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Okay, take a break. Last announcement. Geraldo is one of our students. His mother, Maria, is having an operation tomorrow and wanted to ask everybody to put their mind on that tomorrow and help her. Her name is Maria, okay?
Help!
No. Good job. Okay, Dr. Godawa, we already talked about a relationship such that to be one is to be the other. Okay? Maybe it's more accurate to say a relationship such that to be the first one is to be the second one, which may not be true of the second one to the first one. All right? No. Okay. It is rolling. I wanted to give you three criteria for that relationship, okay? Three criteria. Homework question. Wake up. Okay. First one is that they should be dak ni chikpa. Bao daga dak. Nyagiku ni da ni. Kao chagiku chi. Oh, you're lucky. Okay. Say dagni chikpa. Dagni chikpa means well, so far it means like something like to be one is to be the same thing or something like that, okay? And the trick here is that something which is a changing thing is a dagni chik with something which is a changing thing, but they don't have a relationship because there's no two separate things. How's that? Okay? To be one. Oh, I don't know how to say it. Anyway, same thing? How's that? Same thing. Okay? Dagni chikpa, same thing. All right? You could say same thing about, you know, Winston is the same thing as Winston. How's that? But they don't share a relationship because they're not separate. So far, we don't have all of the required characteristics. The first characteristic is that they should be the same thing. Okay? But we have to have some other characteristics here. Okay, what's the second characteristic? Aha! They should be separate from each other. Okay, which means that Winston can't have a relationship with Winston. I mean, this kind of relationship. Okay, so, alright. Alright. Okay. Should be separate things. Okay. And here's the third quality. Say, chude, mena, kyu, megu. Chude, mena, kyu, megu. Okay. Chude means that thing. And let's take the example of cars, okay? Let's say that chude means that thing, meaning cars. Okay, cars. Chude, cars. That thing, okay? Chude means that thing. I'm using the example of cars. For example, those carses. Okay? Chude. Mena? Mena means if they ceased to exist. Okay? Mena means if they ceased to exist. Kyo here means then this thing, meaning the Chevy. Okay? Kyo here, this thing, meaning in this case, in our case, the Chevy, Megu, would have to cease to exist. Okay? So three requirements for that relationship to hold between two objects. They should be the same thing. I mean, Chevy is the same thing as a car, right? In a sense, should be separate. And if you wiped out all the cars in the world, you'd have to wipe out the Chevy. That's the test of whether they share this relationship. Okay? That's all. That's a general description of three qualities that you'd have to have for them to share a relationship such that to be one is to be the other. Okay? Dagnichigidelwa. Okay? Okay, let's move on. Everyone's got that. Yeah, or it could be both ways. You see what I mean? If you took away all changing things, then you take away all made things, for example. Okay? They are separate things. They refer to the same things, but they are separate things.
They are separate. Okay?
They're distinct. How's that? Why don't we use the word distinct? I think in the reading I used the word distinct. Maybe that's better. Okay. All right. Last thing. Which last thing? Your formal logic, okay? You're deep into it. We have covered two of the kinds of correct reasons. One involved a relation, an identity. One involved cause and effect. Now we've reached mamikbetak. By the way, to make up for logic, I'm going to do Lojong next course. So if you quit tonight, come back in, what is it, May, okay? That'll be straight, you know, office dharma. You know, what do you do in your office, okay? Two extremes. Say, mamikpe tak. Yang da. Mamikbe ta. Yang ta. Okay. This is very difficult to translate. People wander all over to translate it. You know that famous prayer of Jetsun Kapa? Jetsun Kapa's mantra. Mikme tsewe derchen chemisi. Mikme. Mikme means not perceived. Okay. Tseme mamikba. Okay. Tseme mamikba. Here it means a similar thing. Mamikba means not perceived. Okay? I call it, well, we'll get there. Mamikba. Dak means a reason, and yandak means a correct reason. A correct reason to prove the absence of something. Okay? A correct reason to prove the absence of something. Okay? So now we have three kinds of correct reasons. One is where the correct reason involves the nature of the other object. One is where the correct reason has a cause and effect relationship with the other object. And here we have a correct reason for proving that something ain't there. And that's so important that it's treated as a separate kind of reason. Okay? It's so important that it's split off as a separate kind of reason. Mamikpe tayanda. Okay? In fact, it could not have the other two relationships because we're trying to prove an absence. And an absence can't have a relationship. But talking about that later. All right, mamikpe tayanda. I'll give you a classic one. Okay, dungi shi dir chuchen. Say dungi shi dir chuchen. Dungi shi dir chuchen. Okay, and then it's a long story. You know, shasa kano de songi kaza ki gula shasa miche ki tema mete cheche mete miche ki tema mebe eche, something like that, which would mean consider this room. If there were someone in this room who doubted the existence of hungry ghosts, okay, then there could be no one in this room who remembered the hungry ghost they saw. Something like that, okay? In other words, or you could say, consider all the people in this room. Nobody in this room has a valid perception of a hungry ghost because everybody in this room doubts the existence of hungry ghosts. Okay? Meaning, if you prove that no one in this room has had the cause of knowing about hungry ghosts, then you can say they don't know about hungry ghosts. If no one in this room has perceived a hungry ghost with their valid perception, then we can say that nobody in this room could ever have a valid memory of a hungry ghost. That's all. Okay? Or the following would be a proof. Consider everybody in this room. It would be improper for anyone in this room to say that hungry ghosts exist if no one in this room had had a valid perception of them. Okay, that's a classic. Okay, I'll say it again. Consider this whole room. Okay. It would be improper for anyone in this room to swear that hungry ghosts exist if there were no one in this room who had perceived them with a valid perception. Okay. What's the J-cap there? What's the reverse necessity? You know, what is the general truth that they're saying there? If you haven't had a valid perception of if a Buddhist has not had a valid perception of a hungry ghost, then a Buddhist would never go around telling people, oh, hungry ghosts exist. Okay? That's the implication. It's very powerful. I'll say it again. I mean, the Dak Yang Dak, Mamibe Dayan Dak is the following. Consider this room full of people. No one in this room would ever, all being good educated Buddhists, no one in this room would ever go around swearing that hungry ghosts exist if no one in this room had seen them with a valid perception. Period. Okay? And that's a classic Mamikbe Dak Yan Dak. It's a proof for proving the absence of something. Okay? What's absent in this room? The propriety of swearing that hungry ghosts exist. Okay? The correctness of swearing that hungry ghosts exist is not present in this room if no one in this room has had a valid perception of a hungry ghost. Okay? That's all. We're talking about the propriety, okay? The rightness, that it would be right for someone in this room to swear that they exist if they had not had a valid perception of them. And that's an airtight Mamibe Dayan Dak in Buddhism. Okay? And obviously it has applications to how you present Buddhism to other people. You meet many American Buddhists who go from making claims which are seem to be correct, maybe, about that the Buddha might have said, to claims that the Buddha never said, but all with equally insufficient authority. You know what I mean? And you don't want to be like that. It turns people off. You step beyond common ground right away. You know, by claiming, you know, you have to believe in these things. Why? Because we do. You know, just like Santa Claus and all those, and the guy who made the world, you know. No thanks, you know, I've been through that, you know. I want, as a Buddhist, you cannot assert the presence of a thing until you've had a tsema or a pramana about that thing, period. Okay? And that's the classic Mamibe Dak. Okay? Yeah?
How can you assert you're even Buddhist if you haven't had a correct perception or a valid perception of a Buddha?
Oh, she said, how can you assert that you're a Buddhist if you've never had a valid perception of a Buddha? I would say you could assert that you're a Buddhist if you have had a valid perception of teachings which you consider to be authoritative of Buddhism or something like that, right? I mean, to say you're a Buddhist is not to say that you've had a direct perception of Buddha. We don't know. Until you perceived emptiness directly, you probably will not ever directly experience a Buddha. On that day, you do. Okay? But you can have a deductive perception of a Buddha. By the way, did I say direct? Did anybody here say direct? You know, I didn't say direct. I've had a tsema of a preta. I've had a tsema of a hungry ghost. Because Rinpoche said so. Okay? For me, that's tsema. That's lunga tsema, right? Scriptural authority. Of a person I perceive, or I've established in my mind, to be infallible. He said so. Okay? Can you present that to a non-Buddhist? No. You know, can you present that among company, one person of whom doesn't accept that authority? No. Okay? And that's the difference. I didn't say direct perception, right? Direct valid perception. Because that's why we went through the kinds of valid perception, right? There's direct, winsome, there's jibak, and there's those different kinds of jibak. Ngutop, lung, and what was the third? Shungib jibak, and? Huh? Rational belief? No, it was convention, I think. It was convention. I mean, Uncle Sam refers to the American government because by convention, everyone agrees it. And I've had a deductive perception of the American government when somebody talks about Uncle Sam. You know, I haven't met this guy called Uncle Sam, but by convention we understand that we mean the U.S. government that sucks our taxes away. And, you know, I perceive them through that word. Okay, that's all. Okay. two kinds of mamikve tanks. By the way, this part is going to be the same, so you can just write this if you want to be lazy, and I'm sure Punto won't mark it wrong. By the way, somebody made a really good suggestion. It was Randy, actually. And it was, why don't you post the answer keys before the quiz? You know, after everyone has finished their homework already. Okay? And we'll try to do that, okay, for the next class. So if you get here a little bit early next time, we'll try to post the answer keys outside. So that you... You know, even if you screwed it up on the homework, at least when you take your quiz, you know what it's supposed to be, okay? And that makes sense to me. So it'll be on a... Of course, since we're all Buddhists, nobody will cheat or anything like that, okay? You would be denying worldview if you thought that passing the quiz came from cheating, right? You would be denying cause and effect. You'd be spitting on cause and effect. Seriously, okay? Worldview, correct worldview, Yangdapa Thawa says that cheating on a Buddhist homework quiz, you know, would only lead to a negative result, okay? And if you happen to pass because you copied it onto your hand and then wrote it down on the paper, it's not because you copied it on your hand and wrote it on the paper. It's because you did something good in the past. And you have to start thinking like that. That's correct worldview, okay? You have to separate the results of your past deeds from the consequences of your present deeds. That's the skill of being a Buddhist. Okay. All right. Say minangwa, mamikpe, ta, yamda. Minangwa, mamikpe, ta, yamda. The main word here is minangwa. Mamikpe ta yamda. We already had this whole thing here. And it meant a young dak means a correct dak reason for proving mamikpa, the absence of something. Okay, the absence of something. By the way, it's not always technically speaking an absence. It can be not being something, but that's the way it's named. It's called that, although it's not always for an absence. It can be for something not being something else, which is not the same as absence. Okay. Anyway, that's the name of the reason. Okay. Minawa means, generally speaking, the thing that you're denying, right? You're denying something. For example, what was I denying before? The propriety of any Buddhist who hasn't had a pramana or a valid perception about hungry ghosts to get up and say, hungry ghosts must exist. We say so. Okay. What am I denying there? The propriety of saying that hungry ghosts exist, okay? If you haven't seen them, or you can't prove them in any other way, okay? What's the main element in that statement? Hungry ghosts don't exist. What's the key word there, really? What's the key of the whole argument? What's the key of his problem? Hungry ghosts, okay? I mean, the real problem boils down to hungry ghosts, you know? Do they exist or not? I mean, this is difficult to decide. These things are difficult to perceive. We call them keldun. Keldun means something that's kind of beyond us. It's beyond our normal experience. That's the meaning of minangwa. Minangwa here means it is not apparent. Okay? It's not something which is apparent to whom? Mainly to the other guy. Okay? So if the main element that you're denying, which is something about hungry ghosts, is something that the other guy has trouble confirming or not, we call it a minangwa. Okay? How do you translate this? A correct reason for proving the absence of something which is abstruse or difficult for the other person to perceive. Okay? Trying to prove the absence of something, or we're trying to deny the existence of something that the other person might find difficult to perceive. The thing we're denying involves something that's difficult for the other guy to perceive. What's another example? Dungi Shidu Church and take this guy in front of me. Yunden Yume Damchawa Mirikte. I can't say whether he's a Buddha or not. I can't say whether he's seen emptiness or directly or not. Mayinte? I haven't had a perception about that. I don't have a valid perception about that. I can't say if Jay Sillard has seen emptiness directly or not. I can't say. You know, I cannot assert that. I cannot get up here and say he has or he hasn't. Okay? If I have not had a direct, if I have not had a valid perception about it. Okay? That's all. And that's the reason for studying this kind of reason. And this is the one that came in the first reading when we discussed the reason or the purpose of Buddhist logic. And one of the main reasons was not to go to hell for 99 million zillion eons like that guy did. Who was that guy? The Buddha. Okay, and then when he got out, he said, Kanzaki, Kanzaki, don't do it, man. You know, don't judge Jay Siller. You don't know, you know. You can't tell, okay? You haven't had a valid perception about it. This is a minawa mamipe talk. Take Jay Sillard. It would be incorrect to make an assertion about whether or not he's seen emptiness directly if you hadn't had a valid perception about whether or not he had seen emptiness directly. Okay, that's all. That's a great minawa mamipe talk. Because it is not apparent to me or to a normal person who's going to be the opponent in this debate whether or not this person has seen emptiness directly. It's a difficult thing to tell about somebody. And it's a custom even for people who've seen it directly not to say, or not to say in a very direct way that they've seen it directly. Okay, so you're going to have trouble about that. So that's a minawa mamipita. It involves something which is very difficult to perceive, okay, especially for the opponent. And the purpose of it gets down to the purpose of all Buddhist logic, which is you have to learn. What do you call it? There's a word in English. I forget the word. You have to learn to be somehow, it sounds like critical. Critical or...
discerning.
Not discerning. It's something where you don't believe it until you see it. Skeptical almost or something like that. It's not skeptical. But anyway, the purpose of Buddhist logic is that the better you get at it, the more you realize how much you don't know. You know, the better you get at Buddhist logic, the more sensitive you become to the fact of how much you don't really know and how much you're assuming in a very illogical way, especially about other people. Okay, and all the bad karma you're collecting that way. Okay, who knows who they are? You see what I mean? Do you have a valid perception about it? And if not, the Buddha called it medong. Medong, actually, is. It's like there's a special barbecue pit in ancient India where they make a big pit and then they fill it full of firewood and then they burn it all day. And then there's this the gray color of the ashes looks like the gray color of the sand around it. And you might just walk onto it not realizing, and then suddenly you're in 6 feet of embers. And he says, medong, you know, it's like a pit of embers to think you know much about other people. You know, you use your Buddhist logic to establish to your own mind, to prove to your own self that much of the judgment you have of other people, if not all of it, is invalid. You can't tell, you don't know. You know, you don't have a valid perception about it. So be careful. That's the big deal about minawa. That's why they create this category of logic. Okay. What's the second one? By the way, that has applications up to the highest teachings of Buddhism, obviously, if you think about it, if you've had them. Okay. All right. It has profound applications in the highest teachings of Buddhism. Okay. Maybe you could say you have to get pretty good at this before you can really appreciate the highest teachings of Buddhism. Kirim. Okay. By the way, you don't have to write the whole thing because this much is the same. Say Nangrung. Nangrung. That's really the last thing from formal lodging tonight. Nangrung just means the thing can appear to the perceptions of your opponent, to the normal perceptions of your opponent. Okay, it's not like some difficult to perceive thing like whether or not Jay Siller has perceived emptiness directly, or whether or not this hungry ghost perception here, or something like that. For example, if I say, consider the top of this pen, there's no car there because there's no Chevy there. Okay, that's a Nangrung Mamibe Dayanda. Okay? You don't have to be a person with ESP to perceive the truth of that. You know, a normal human being in this room who knows what a Chevy is and what a car is can perceive it. So it's a reason for proving the absence of something which is something which could appear to the valid perceptions of a normal opponent. Okay, that's all. Okay. In the last section on debating, okay, you gotta, can I borrow your rosary? I thought you might like to learn some, I call that section debating tactics. Okay, tactics means, I like to call it the Muhammad Ali tactics. Okay. I don't know. I used to like to watch Muhammad Ali fight. The first thing I ever said to Rinpoche, I mean, Rinpoche, I was like 20-something years old, and I walk in there, and he gave a class, and I was late, because it snowed, and the car broke down. I had to hitchhike, and all this stuff, and I got there late, and it was just about to let out, and then it let out, and he said, hang around, and I hung around, and I was standing there, and I'm waiting for the word from the master. You know, the Dalai Lama has sent me to meet this Lama, you know, and said, you have to go study there, that would be good, you know. So I'm like waiting, and he looks, I remember he was sitting at the table there in the kitchen, and the other house didn't exist yet, and I'm standing there and I'm waiting, you know, what's he going to say to me, you know, and I'm all nervous, and he says, hey, did you watch Muhammad Ali fight last night? You know, and I'm like, no. And then I'm like judging him, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, fighting's not very good, you know, he just beats up people and stuff like that. He says, oh, no, no, he doesn't want to hurt anybody, he just wants to be good at what he does, you know. And that was our first exchange. So anyway, Muhammad, the great thing about Muhammad Ali was rope-a-dope and stuff like that. It was all these taunting the other guy to the point where he gets so confused before you even punch him. You know what I mean? Before you swing your arm, he's already like in another world, you know, like he's already confused. And he's like wondering, what the hell are you doing? Because you're standing there like that, you know, hit me. You know, like that was the last fight with this Mexican guy, and he just stood there and then let the guy punch him until the guy got so tired. And then he just, you know, hit him once, you know. And this is a skill in debate, and that's to rope-a-dope, you know, it's to get your opponent so confused and distracted that you can wipe him out with your point, okay? And I'm going to teach you some of those, okay? It's very much a part of debating. Is it part of debating because you want to be mean? Obviously not. Is it a part of debating because you want to hurt the other guy's feelings? You better forget that when you walk into the debate ground. Is it a part of debate because you want to beat the other guy? Not at all. You want to help him, okay? You want to help him get to a place where he can focus his mind totally in the middle of mayhem, you know? In the middle of chaos, he can keep his attention and he can keep his very complicated chess moves in mind, you know? Even while you're saying all these things about him and you're egging on the other people, okay, to start whoa and you know, and you're hitting him on his head and his thing, but he's keeping his concentration is unshakable, and it's going to be useful for him later when he meditates, and you know people are fire trucks go down 6th Street or they make a movie there or some stupid thing, and you're trying to concentrate and there's noises and stuff like that. It's very, very important to learn to do it. So these are not just a game. It has a very great use for everybody involved. Okay, so here we go. Who do I pick on? I made a list of them in your reading. Okay, and I went to Rinpoche and I said, "How do you spell all these stupid things?" Because nobody in the monastery knows. Okay, They're just things that people have always said during debates. And there could mean 3-4 different things. And he said, I don't know. And this is the abbot of Saramay Monastery, you know, and the greatest debater on this planet, maybe. And he says, I don't know. So we sat down together and we worked it, you know, out what they probably used to mean or something like that. They've just taken on new meaning. I mean, nobody thinks of them as words anymore. They're just things you say when you get the guy in that corner. And then you say it, you know, and it doesn't particularly have much meaning anymore. It's just the emotion of the thing is what it's supposed to be. Okay, so let's start like that. Gelwa la yewa mebe echa. Okay, so wait, you start like this. Okay, let's get somebody else to do it. Jackie? No, come on. Okay, pick on him. Okay. Maybe Punto. Yeah, do you mind to sit here? Come on. No, come. Stop it right here. We can catch this historical moment on film. Okay, I think you face him this way so everybody can see. Okay, all right. And you got to go home and practice this, okay? So first thing is...
Which is the opponent?
Well, I'm calling him the attacker and he's the defender, okay? In the reading, he's the attacker and he's the defender. And if the monk has improperly only used half of his shawl by folding it like that, then when he drops it, there's nothing left here, you see? And that happened to me one time and I got in trouble. But anyway... You didn't get away with it. All right. Anyway. So first thing, you put your sen back like that. Okay. That shows respect for his opponent. And by the way, this has been done since the time of the Buddha, right? The opening of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, you know, Subhuti puts his shawl up there and he gets down on his right knee. Okay. Anyway, you go up and you go down close to his face. Okay, ready? This is always on your left hand. Okay. Okay. Okay, what's the D? What's D? Yeah, the root syllable for wisdom. Okay, it's like, I hope we can all be smart tonight. Okay, D. Chita chichen means, how about this? So if you're going to do it in English, I don't mind. Okay, D, how about this one? Okay, D, how about this one? Okay, D, chita chichen. Then you start your debate. Gawala.
Gawala.
Yewa.
Yewa.
Maybe it's
Maybe
it's Say, maybe it's Maybe it's Gelwa means what? By the way, this is the way to learn a lesson. Don't go home with the stupid 50-page incomprehensible reasoning and try to read it. You know, get one of your friends and get the most important homework questions and debate them. And then you'll learn them in like an hour. And then you don't have to read all that stuff. Okay, Gelwa la yewa maybe it's Gelwa means what? Yeah, contradiction. Like, yewa means different kinds. Yewa means divisions. Okay. Me means what? There aren't any. Okay. There's no different divisions of contradictions. Okay. There's no different divisions of contradictions. Then he says, louder.
Tamadu.
Tamadu. Okay. Say ta. Madu. Tamadu. And I don't care if you do it in English or Tibetan. If you're a Tibetan track, I suggest you do it with Tibetan, you know, if you're not, it's okay. So Gelwala Yewa, maybe he said Tamadu. Then you confirm. Fax machine confirms back, you know. Are you telling me that there are divisions of Gelwas? Gelwala. Yewa. Yubata. Yubata. Say Yubata. Yubata. Are you telling me there are divisions to Gelwas? Mr. Punza? Duh. Okay. By the way, don't say duh if you ain't got them ready. Okay? Don't say duh if you're not ready. And now I'm going to teach you the first tactic, the stalling tactic. Okay? Say, ah. No, listen. Ah means, what'd you say? Okay. You can also say, la. That's a little more polite, okay? La. Okay, and I wrote them down for you in the reading. Okay, say, means, what the hell you say? Okay, Okay, and you can also say, la. La means, I didn't quite catch what you said, you know? Okay, and what you can do in that few seconds while he's, you know, repeating is you can think real fast what to say, okay? So, yata. Are you ready? Okay. Then you say, shok. Okay, by the way, that's low tone, shok, right? Shok, shok, shok. Say shok. Shok. Okay. Show means, show me. Let's see him. Okay? Shok.
Don't.
By the way, don't. This is for the 3-year-olds, okay? Hey, hey, hey. Shok. This is for the kids, okay? I don't want to see sissies, okay? Shok. You gotta get that. Shok. Shok. Okay, show.
Lambda, lambda.
Okay, by the way, you ready? Oh, chill. Okay, I asked Rinpoche, is it chow or chew or chew or what is it? And he says, I don't know. You know, and apparently, you know, this is a winter debate thing between colleges, and this is the most popular way to say, come on, say something, you know. Some people say it's cheer, which means, you know, because, you know, he said cheer. What are you going to say, man? Say something. Cheer. You know, some people say it's che. Che means stalled. Hey, you stalled, man. Let's get going. Okay. It's the che in diamond cutter. Che. Okay, you're stalled. Some people say that. Rinpoche says it's probably cheer, but nobody knows. Okay. Cheer. Oh. Okay, you gotta learn high jump. Say high jump. Okay, I'm just trying to teach you all the ones you might hear. Okay, say ha ha. He's good at it. He's a natural. Okay, ha ha means come on, you're a laughing stock. Okay. Laughing star. Okay. Now say. Shosho. Ngungyo?
Ngungyo and Gungyo.
Ngungyo dang.
Ngungyo dang.
Gungyo?
Gungyo.
Imada! You telling me it's direct contradiction and indirect contradiction? Is the two main divisions?
No, it's just name two. I did name two.
Yes. Again, please. Yeah, so he says duh, right?
Duh.
Wacha! Wacha! Okay, that's another one you gotta learn, okay? Ready? Wacha! Wacha! Okay, sa. Like, we're trying to figure out what sa. I've heard two versions of the monastery. One is ngota. Say ngota.
Ngota.
Ngota. If you studied mental functions or bodhisattva vows, ngota shepa, chel yepa, ngota means to be ashamed or to be embarrassed, okay? So, sa means, you should be ashamed of yourself. That's such it. Okay, and you do it with the back of your hand like that. And usually you do it twice. You know, you do it like, such it. What? Such it. Okay, all right, like that. And you should be ashamed of your answer like that. And if you really want to rub it in, you go. Okay, try it. It means, is this getting red? You're a disgrace. Okay. I'll touch it. Touch it. You say, Yawa Yimbata. You telling me that's the division? Yawa?
Yawa?
Yimbata.
Yawa Yimbata.
Duh. My Yimbata?
My Yimbata?
No, it's not. Okay? Because the Yawa is Pensin Pangyal. Pensin? By the way, easiest, fastest way to learn. It's been 4 minutes. They have already learned most of the vocabulary. You see what I mean? It's totally the easiest way to learn. Your Tibetan and your scripture reading just accelerate like 100%. Okay? Pensin.
Pensin.
Pangyal.
Pangyal.
Dang.
Dang.
Lenchik.
Lenchik.
Minengyal. Okay. Say again. Pensin.
Pensin.
Pangyal.
Dang.
Lenchik.
Minengyal.
Yinbeishi. That's the real division.
What do I say now?
Say tamadu.
Tamadu.
Okay, now I want to teach you another one. Come along. Say kyabalong.
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 Okay. Kyabalong means give me the kyaba. You know, give me your new screwed up stupid kyaba. Okay. And you'll see that you're wrong. Okay. Kyabalong.
Kyabalong.
So here it would be, okay, those are the two main divisions of Gelwas, but those aren't the main divisions of Gelwa. Just because they're those main divisions of Gelwa doesn't mean it's the kind of Gelwa I'm talking about, or something like that. It's an indefensible Kyaba, okay? It's an indefensible statement of necessity. So when you think he's getting close to one, you say, Kyabalong, okay? You get him in a corner and you say, Kyabalong, okay, give me your stupid Kyaba, and everybody will go, what? All right, Kyabalong, that's another one. Kyabalong, there was another one. Satching. Can't remember. Let me check. What's in the meaning? Che. Okay, let's see. Labda, you know. Okay, say Labda.
Labda.
Labda. Labda means say something already. Okay, you're asking him a question. Say, and then he sits there and goes, you know, he said, Labda, Labda. Okay, Labda, Labda. By the way, you can start a woe whether you're right or not. It's a good way to buy time. And 50% of the people who join you haven't even been listening. And they don't know if he said something stupid or not. And oftentimes some guy will give a great answer, but the opponent, to get out of it, will start a woe, you know? And then it looks like he's wrong and he's not wrong. Okay, but this is the way it goes. Oh, there's one more. Okay. Do you agree that sound is a made thing?
Yeah.
And do you agree that if something is made, it must be changing?
It must.
So now I ask you, is sound a changing thing? And don't forget, you're a non-Buddhist who thinks that Om is an unchanging thing. No, don't forget, by the way, you take wrong positions all the time, okay? It makes it more fun, okay? Don't get into American competitive pride bullshit, you know? Take a position which you know is wrong and let the other guy prove you wrong, and it'll help everybody, you know? Don't try to be right all the time. It's the best way to be a lousy debater. Take an interesting wrong position, and let's see where we can go with it, you know? You, my friend, are a non-Buddhist who believes that sound is unchanging. I am playing the Buddhist who's trying to convince you that sound is a changing thing. Even the sacred syllable, Om, okay, is a changing thing. So I say, so don't forget where we're coming from. You're a Qigoyangda means a proper opponent for my debate. And you can say that, you know, in the monastery you can say, okay, look, I'm going to play the Buddhist, you play the Hindu, okay? Do you agree? So now you got to defend it, you know, like it's your own. You know, you got to defend it with your heart. Okay, ready? Take sound, it's a changing thing because it's something made.
Agree.
No, you don't. You don't know you. Let's try again.
Are we studying?
You're the non-Buddhist. Okay. Dachi Chen. Date Chen Chen. Take sounds. They are changing things because they're made things. So you believe that sound is a changing thing, right? I'm sorry. You believe that sound is something that's made, right? And you believe that if something's made, it must be a changing thing, right?
Yeah.
And you still say sound is unchanging.
Yeah.
Korti pasu! Okay. Say korti.
Korti.
Kosu.
Kosu.
Korti.
Korti.
Kosu. Okay. Korti kosu means, man, you just, korti kosu means you just travel in a big circular reasoning. You know what I mean? Meaning, you know, you're just crazy, you know. You accept one thing, accept the other thing, and you do not accept the necessary consequence of accepting those two things. And we call it, in scripture, in logic, it's called korsum. Say korsum. Korsum. Which means three circles, okay, korsum. In logic, you'll see it in logic text, korsum. At this point, you'll see korsum. In the monastery, you can either say korsum, But you've got to do a kor, okay? Or you can say korti korsu, okay? You go korti, try. Korti korsu. Okay, like, man, you just went in three big circles. First you say sound is a made thing. Then you say if something is a made thing, it must be a changing thing. And then you say that sound is not a changing thing. Korti korsu. Say korti korsu. Okay. And the D is, again, I asked Rinpoche, nobody knows what's the korti korsu, you know. He says it, I guess it's Manjushri Sitsoma. Okay, again. It could be korte korsum, which would mean that you've done three circles, something like that. So those are all the wild expressions you do to try to shake his concentration. Okay, and then, so you gotta try to debate. I'll give you one debate to do between yourselves, and you gotta find a partner, okay? I debated with myself for about 5 years in the lobby of the temple, because I couldn't find anybody that wanted to do it. And then Benjamin Altman agreed to do it on the phone. And we did it on the phone for like a year, okay? And so, you know, if you can't find somebody to do it with, then do it. You can do it with yourself, but it's like playing checkers with yourself or something. It's not too much fun, okay? And I'll give you, there are no divisions to contradiction, okay? Start out. One guy starts out like that. The attacker starts out with something crazy, okay? Okay? There are no different types of contradictions. Okay? Okay? There are no different types of contradiction. And then he says, Tamadu. Okay? Then he says, are you telling me there are different types of contradiction? And he says, duh. By the way, you can do it in Tibetan or it doesn't matter. Okay? Gyawa la yewa maybe. There's no divisions of contradiction. And then he says, not correct. And I say, then there are divisions. And he says, right. Duh. And I say, shaw. And then he says, pensin pangel. Say pensin pangel. That mutually exclusive thing. Dung. And tlenchik. Sorry. Minengel. Tlenchik. Minengel. Okay? And if you do that for like 10 minutes, your homework is like that. It's not a question. Okay? Yutte, show. Show me the two. Show. In Tibetan. Penzin Pangel Dang. Dang. Okay, second one. Tenchik Minengel. Prenasal there. Tenchik Minengel. Yimbapa. You tell me those are the two divisions? Okay. Tenchik Minengel, show. Give me an example of diametric opposites. Give me an example. Any example. Shok. Shok. What?
Nyambo.
Nyambo dang.
Bangja.
Bangja ni. Yimba ta. So he said, spiritual antidote and some kind of bad quality that you have. Okay. Nyambo dang. Bangja ni. Okay. Supung chu chen. Yeah. Tenjim nengya. Yimba ta. I'm sorry. let's say, deniki shitu meata. So I guess there's no one thing that can be both. What? Fucking. Okay. I said, there's no one thing that can be both, and he said, well, that doesn't prove that they're not contradictories. Okay. But that's the definition of contradiction. You see. There cannot be one thing which can be both. Now, he's probably going to say, no, that's a definition of Pensum Bangal. But don't forget, what was that line? What was that line in the text? Pensum Bangal Dang Gelwa Dunjik. He came up and asked me, what does that mean? Okay, I mean, he's got that little text there, right? Don't forget, this is the only real contradiction. The first one is the only real kind. Okay? It's a mutually exclusive kind. Now, he gave me Nyambo and Pangja. One thing can be both. What do you say? Can be. You got three choices. Give me one of them. There is such a thing which can be both. Dhammadru. I don't agree there's such a thing which can be both. Kyabamajum. Yeah, there is such a thing which can be both, but it doesn't prove what you're trying to prove. Sho. Tamadu. He said there is no one thing which can be a Nyambo and a Pangcha. Meata. You tell me there's not? Supun Chu Chen. Supun Chu Chen. Take your body, your precious human rebirth. So I guess it's not an antidote to your spiritual problems and also something to be given up eventually. Yeah, supun chuchen. By the way, you have to say sakchen yonengi supun, which means the dirty, impure physical body that you have taken on in this life. Yiga maimata. I guess it's not both because there's nothing that's both. Latta.
It's not both.
Maimata. It's not both. Precious human rebirth. Maimata. So I guess it's not a precious human rebirth. So it is like precious human memory. Yeah. And you do have to give it up when you reach your Buddha paradise. The dirty body that you took on in this life. Oh. And you can't use it to overcome your mental afflictions, for example. And reach Buddhahood with it. This precious human memory. Yeah, Korti! Alright? You just went in a big circle. Okay. Now, if he's really good, he'll say, you know, well, come on, you don't use your physical body, use your mind, you know, or something like that. And then we'll get into, well, why do they talk about, you know, is it useless? Can I just get rid of my body and use the mind? Or something like that, okay? Alright, thank you. Alright, we'll do prayers, alright? Try to practice a little bit, alright? With yourself. And then next time we'll do a little more with. Next time we'll actually get into groups, okay? And I'll go around and help each group a little. Sashi Bhagi Jushin Etosham Rira Vinshi Nyende Kempadi Sange Shindu Mithe
This is the end of Class 7.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.